Hello, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of My Cancer Story podcast, where we share stories of cancer fighters and cancer survivors every other Thursday. My name is Jess Nelson. I am your host and the creator of My Cancer Story podcast. On this week's episode, you are going to meet Peyton Adams. She is a stage 3 ovarian cancer survivor. And at the very, very young age of 22, she had just finished up college and was about to start a new job in Arizona when she was diagnosed with cancer. She shares her whole experience and how she stayed motivated and how she did her due diligence and her research and advocated for herself to get the diagnosis and the treatment. So please, please listen to the whole thing. I apologize in advance. I had a little internet hiccup during our conversation, but I'll try to make it as seamless as possible. But please enjoy this episode. You're going to learn so much from this intelligent young woman, and you're going to be so inspired by Peyton's story. So guys, please meet Peyton. So Peyton, thank you so much for joining me on my Cancer Story podcast. Everyone, I have Peyton Adams today here with me. She had stage 3 ovarian cancer and reached out to me through Instagram to share her story and to help raise awareness more for ovarian cancer, just because there is lesser known side effects or symptoms of ovarian cancer and just not as much information out there for people to know more about ovarian cancer. So I will let you get into it, Peyton. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, and I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, great. And I'll have you just go ahead and start your cancer story and we'll get going from there.
Okay. Well, I don't really know where to start, but I guess it kind of starts my junior year of college. Okay. I was about to go study abroad. So I was just kind of making a lot of changes, and really the first thing that I noticed was I had switched birth controls and my period just completely stopped. And I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. Like, that's never happened before, whatever. So I called my doctor and I was like, hey, this is what's going on. She was like, no worries, totally normal. Whatever, don't even worry about it, don't fret. So I was on that pill for a while and I had lost about 15 pounds. Maybe not 15, maybe like 10 at that point before studying abroad. I was like, oh, that's kind of weird too. Whatever. I mentioned that to my doctor and she was like, you know, not a big deal. Just hormonal side effects, whatever, keep going. So I go study abroad, have the best time of my life. I studied in Italy. It was so much fun. So it was amazing. And there, you know, like you're eating fresh food all the time. I'm walking everywhere. So I lost probably another 5 pounds. So when my mom got there, she was a little bit, you know, worried. She was like, what's going on? Is there anything going on? I was like, no, I'm just walking all the time, doing my own thing, you know, eating fresh food, whatever. So we have the best time. I start my senior year and my friends hadn't seen me since I had left for abroad. And that was the first thing like all of my friends said. They're like, what's going on? You know, it's like noticeable. And I was like, guys, like, don't worry, like nothing to worry about. Like there's nothing going on. And so to be completely honest, like that started to get to me. I mean, like it was like, I could hear it, you know, going through just the friend groups and stuff like that. And so it really started to get to me. And it was something that I started to like, not notice, but it was something I was like really critical of. And I think a lot of like young women struggle with that. Mm-hmm. So it was something that I like started to become critical of and like really paid too much attention to. So it really started to kind of impact me and like kind of developed a little bit of like what I would call body dysmorphia, because I was like, everyone kept telling me like how thin I was. And I felt like I wasn't thin. Like, I was like, I feel like bloated all the time and just like not myself. And I was like, that's just so weird because I don't see it. So when I came home, from study abroad, I had noticed kind of a change in my belly button. And I was like, that's really strange. Like maybe, you know, sitting on an airplane for 12 hours, I had a belly button ring at the time. Maybe it kind of got infected, whatever. And so I mentioned it to my mom and she was like, you need to get in. But where I went to school was in Eugene. It just, you know, wasn't the best like medical care there. So I was like, oh, I'll just wait till I get home. Yeah. You know, whatever, not a big deal. Not worried. Got home for Christmas break. That was the first thing my mom made me do.
Going
to the doctor. And so I go into the doctor. I wasn't worried. I was like, you know what? It's not a big deal. Like, obviously I always had anxiety going to the doctor. So I was just a little bit anxious. And so we go in and it was just really brash. Like the doctor was like, looked at it and I was like kind of explaining, I was all nervous. I was like, I think it's just my belly button. Like, it's not a big deal. Like whatever, kind of like already trying to be like self-diagnosed myself.
Yeah. Just like push it off. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, she was like, so she looked at it, they took a topical sample of it and she was like, this is like not a big deal. I can already tell you that. Like, we'll have the you know, results back in like 48 hours, but don't stress yourself out. So I was like, okay, perfect. Like she didn't palpitate my abdomen, none of that. Like she didn't really do like a full assessment. Okay. So we got the results back and it was just a topical infection, like, cause they only did the top.
Yeah.
And so my mom was like, okay, like good. That's good. I was like getting worried, whatever. I was like, me too. So I was on the antibiotic for 2 weeks and there was no change. And I was like, okay, this is just weird and kind of annoying at this point. And it was my senior year of college. I had a lot of other things going on.
Yeah.
I was trying to get a job. Just like so many other things going on in my life, honestly. And I was like, I just don't have time for this. Like, it doesn't bother me. It's not like an eyesore. And I don't know. I was just like, I'll just push it off. I'll deal with it once my life is a little bit more calm. And so then once I noticed, then it had been like 2 months and it still hadn't changed. And then it was COVID. And so obviously, yeah. So then obviously I was just like, okay, I don't want to like go into the doctor right now. Like this is scary, whatever. I'm also trying to finish up my senior year of college. Like I'll just keep pushing it off kind of. And by that point, like my junior year of college, I was probably like 140. And at that point I was like 120. So it was like very noticeable.
That's a big
change.
Deal. How tall are you? I imagine it was like a lot on your frame.
Yeah, I was like I'm 5'3". So it was noticeable.
That's a lot.
And so once toward the end of my senior year of college, I was looking back at photos, you know, like, you know, reminiscing, whatever. And that's when I like noticed it myself. And I was like, oh, okay.
Wow. Yeah.
This is like a big change. Like I see what people are talking about now. Mm-hmm. And so I made an appointment for the day I got basically back from graduation, whatever. So go in July 5th to what I thought would just be whatever. Let's figure this out. It's a belly button hernia. Let's get the surgery, get it done. At that point, I had already like had a job serving in underserved schools in Arizona. Like we had our boxes packed. Like I was about to move. Like I was leaving in 7 days from that doctor's appointment to like start my post-grad career. Like I was ready.
Mm-hmm.
So I go into the doctor's appointment. It was during COVID, obviously. So my mom came to the doctor's appointment with me, but they're like, oh, you can't come back.
She had to wait outside. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, I don't really care, whatever. So go back with the nurse. I kind of like casually mentioned, I was like, oh yeah, I've lost a little bit of weight since the last time I've been in, you know, whatever. And she kind of just shrugged it off. She's like, okay, whatever, go in. An actual doctor comes in. So I kind of explained what's going on. I was like, yeah, I've lost a little bit of weight. My periods have stopped. And I have this weird belly button thing going on. Don't really know what it is, but that's why I'm here. She's like, okay, like, do you have a history of cancer in your family? And I was like, oh yeah, like my grandparents, like my grandma had breast cancer. Mm-hmm. She's a stage 4 survivor. And then grandpa also has prostate cancer, both on my dad's side. And she was like, okay, like, you know, that's kind of typical. A lot of people have family history of cancer. So she didn't really like press on that issue very much. And then once I kind of laid down for the physical exam, she was just going to check out my abdomen. Mm-hmm. I could just tell on her face, like something was wrong.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like I started to get really nervous. I was like, oh gosh, like I didn't have that reaction, you know, from the last doctor I'd seen.
Yeah.
So I started to kind of panic and she like starts palpitating my abdomen and I could just tell like she was really stoic and quiet. And I was like, okay, like I'm starting to freak out. I really wish my mom was in the room with me.
Yeah.
And so she was like, she sits me up. She was like, okay, so like, is there any chance that you're pregnant? And I was just like,
what?
Like, I was like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't know. I kind of just freaked out. And I was like, I mean, I don't know. Like, and she was like, well, first, like, let's just start with the pregnancy test. Like your abdomen feels really hard. So let's start with a pregnancy test. And I was like, okay. And I can tell, like, she could tell I was freaking out. And she was like,
yeah,
you know what? Like, I'll let your mom come back like for the results. Like, I can tell that you're kind of you know, I was like, yeah, I'm freaking out. Hello. Like, yeah. And so go back, you know, come back. And my mom's in the room and she's like freaking, like, she's like, she doesn't really panic. And she was panicked and she's like, what's going on? Like, why am I coming back? Like, you know, whatever. And I was like, I honestly don't know. I just took a pregnancy test. And she was like, what? And so like, we were both just like worried about that. Honestly, like we were like, okay, like whatever. And so she comes back in the room and she was like, so we're both sitting there. I can just like picture it perfectly. And she comes back in the room and she's like, okay, so, you know, the pregnancy test is negative. And at that point I just shut off. I was like, okay, whatever else it is, like, what? I don't really care. And so then like, I kind of, you know, when you just like are, I don't want to say overjoyed because like, I don't know. I know for many women, like that's something they want. But for me personally, I had kind of just decided I had always planned to adopt or just really not have a kid.
And, you know, so, it's a point in time in your life too. You're like, you're young. You're like a senior in college. You have like a lot of life ahead of you. So it's just not in
the perfect time. Yeah. And so, you know, I kind of checked, like, I was just like, you know, thinking about that, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of hear her go, but it could be cancer. And I was like, what? Like, check back into this conversation really quick. Like, what are you talking about? And she was like, well, like upon the physical exam, you know, I felt like multiple masses throughout your abdomen. And like, this probably means cancer. Like she literally said that, which it's like, you really don't,
you
like
haven't done now any I've
come
yet.
To know. Now I've come to know that like you probably shouldn't drop that word in a primary physician doctor appointment without like any kind of, you know, background knowledge or anything like that.
Or just like an ultrasound or literally blood test or something.
Right? It was so crazy. So it was, so my mom and I left that appointment. We were both just like, you know, it just felt like an out of body experience. We were both like, what's going on? Like we had, I had an emergency ultrasound the next day planned. And so we were just like, okay. So I went in right directly from that appointment to just get some basic blood work done. So the next day go into the emergency ultrasound and sitting there, and it was just the ultrasound of the abdomen. And I could tell on my left side, like the technician was really hanging out over there.
I hate when they do that.
Right?
Like, what's over there? What are you doing?
Yeah. And I was like, you know, I was like, I don't know what's over there. I, at that point, I hadn't really studied the anatomy, you know, like I was just like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So, you know, I could really tell like something was going on in that region. Something was wrong, whatever. And so when I left, I told my mom that I was like, something's up. Something's on the left side. Like, she spent a lot of time over there. And so we're driving, you know, out of that appointment. It's maybe like a 10-minute drive to my house. We're like 5 minutes into the drive and I already have a call.
So
yeah, I answered the phone and I knew it was the doctor's office because it was an unknown number.
Yeah.
And it was my primary like physician. She's like, hey Peyton, like, where are you? Like, do you have a second to talk? And so my mom's in the car, but she's also driving. So I don't want to like scare her. So, you know, I'm just like, I kind of just was like, all right, I'm just going to act normal and just kind of take this information and then like tell her once we're stopped.
Oh my God. That's like incredibly difficult to do. Like just to act normal.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I know. It was so, and I didn't really know what to expect. So she was just like, so like, I'm just going to give you the results now. Like it, there's multiple, like what I felt in the physical exam, like these are multiple masses and there are some like on the periphery of your liver. And these are like what we're really kind of concerned about. Because there's so many, like they seem to be acting cancerous because they have already like spread throughout your abdomen. So I'm sitting there just like, okay. Okay. Like not saying like, okay, sounds good. Just like, okay. Like trying to just keep as calm as I can. And then she was like, you know, like, do you have any questions? And I was like, well, I can't ask the questions right now. My mom's sitting right next to me. And I was like, oh, like at this time, not really, but I'm sure like we'll be in contact soon. Like, and she's like, okay, you have a CT scan tomorrow because we want to get like the full picture. I was like, okay, whatever, hang up the phone. And at this point we're like turning onto my street and my mom's like, what, like, tell me what's going on. Like, why didn't you put it on speaker, whatever? And I was like, oh, like, you know, like we have a CT scan tomorrow. Kind of just like, kind of trying to skirt around the conversation until she had like I just wanted her to be, yeah, like in a, you know, like she's my mom. Like, yeah. I don't know. I just can't even imagine. So we get to the house and I kind of just look at her and I was like, it's not the best news. Like, there's multiple masses, like I was saying, like on my left side, like whatever. And she just was like, that was not what she was expecting. Like, yeah. I think she was like,
you kept her cool, which
exactly
is crazy that you're able to do.
Yeah, it was hard. Like, I don't know that I kind of have a weird, like I have a unique ability to kind of compartmentalize.
I was
like,
gonna say that,
you know, like, just like I just, yeah, I'm just like, yeah. Okay, this is the situation. Let me just like, you know, handle it the best way I can in that situation.
Yeah.
So that was kind of how that started. And then went for the CT scan. Okay. And that's when I got my official diagnosis. They're like, this is acting like ovarian cancer. This is what it looks like, blah, blah, blah. And at that point, like in my life, like I had never heard of ovarian cancer. Like, you know, I heard cervical cancer, breast cancer, all that kind of stuff. And I was just like, what do you even mean? Like, I mean, I've never even heard of that. I don't know anyone, like a family friend or anything that has gone through this. So just being the person I am, like, I literally logged into my, like my school's like UOregon thing, you know, and you can, that's how, like, cause I did a lot of research like for my major. So I used my school ID to log into like the scholarly articles.
I was going
to
say, like, went just, on like PubMed and stuff.
Yeah. And so I just started reading. And so like after the CT, yeah. So I just like started literally doing like research, like this sort of research paper. I was like, I'm going to know everything there is to know. Like, you know, I just wanted to be equipped with knowledge, like when I walked into these appointments.
You are so smart, you know, because when people get diagnosed or they're about to be diagnosed, number one thing they say is don't Google it. And you didn't Google it. You actually like went logically into research articles, scholarly articles, and actually read research. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. You're like, I don't know. You're like this like old soul, like the fact that you're like, I can think logically. I'm looking this up. I'm going to learn as much as I can before my next step. So kudos to you. That was amazing. Like I
thank you.
Think about doing that. That's I'm glad you had the resources to do it.
Yeah, exactly. That was a big thing too.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's what everyone says. Like they're just like, you just kind of handled this, like, you know, just took it to the face. And I was like, honestly, yeah. Like, but on also like, I think unless you've been diagnosed, you don't understand that that's really the only option you have. Like, what else can you really do at that point? Like, you kind of just have to take it on like that.
Yeah.
So my primary physician referred me to a gynecological oncologist. And so I was super excited because she was like, this is like one of the best surgeons in San Diego. He's so awesome. Like, blah, blah, you're going to have a great experience. So I was like, okay, awesome. Like, awesome, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I'm glad that I'm going to be in the hands of like a trustworthy doctor.
Yeah.
So we go to the appointment and he's an older man. And so, you know, there's just always going to be that generational difference. Like, I kind of knew that going in, like, you know, there's certain things that maybe he doesn't understand that like are very common nowadays. Yeah. So like we were walking through the CT scans, you know, he was like, in the best way possible, he was kind of like, this is not good. Like, you have a lot going on here and we're not really sure like how. He's like, basically he like used the word inoperable in my first appointment. Which was like really a tough word to swallow. I was like, okay. And so he used the word inoperable and then he was like, but you know, like once I get in there, I'm gonna do everything I can to like save at least one ovary. And I was like, you know, like I really appreciate that, but that is not really something I value. Like, I'm not, like, for a long time, I'd already kind of decided, like, for me, just, like, I hadn't valued, like, giving birth as, like, one of the things that I needed to do, like, to feel, like, womanly. I don't really know. That was just something I'd always felt.
And that's okay. Yeah. Not everyone wants to have babies.
Exactly. So I was, like, honestly, like, I don't really want that. Like, I would rather us just do, like, everything we can to just, like, do this in one swoop and just kind of leave it, like, have a better chance later. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, you know, like, you're too young to make that decision. And I was like,
okay.
I was like, you know, in my mind, I was like, is it my age or is it my gender? Like, that you're kind of having issue with here.
It would have been really funny if you said like, okay, boomer.
Yeah, exactly. That was literally what I thought.
Bro.
I was just sitting there and I was like, that's crazy because I can make so many other medical decisions.
Yeah.
It was so rude. And so that was the first time that he like rubbed me wrong. I was like, all right, strike one. And so then he did a physical exam of my abdomen and kind of was like, and he literally said to me, he's like, I don't know how you let this go on for so long. And I was like,
how does that help anybody by saying
literally
that? It helps other than making yourself look like you were right.
Like, yeah. It's like, I was like, you know what? Like, that's probably the worst thing you could say to someone. And like, it just doesn't
do anybody
help.
Any good.
No, I was like, that doesn't make me feel better.
I'm so mad for you.
Yeah. So that was like, so walking out of that appointment, I was like heated. I was mad. I was like, this is like the last thing I expected. I expected to be like supported, you know, like whatever. That was just not what I was expecting leaving that appointment.
A little bit more empathy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, especially because this is his life work. Like he works with cancer patients. Like you should have some skills of, you know, empathy.
Yeah.
Anyway. So I was like, okay. Like I was telling my mom that I was just like, I don't like this guy. Like I'm not vibing with him. Like this isn't, I don't know if this is a good match. And like, she was just like, this is like the best surgeon in San Diego. You know, like she wanted the best for me medically. She was like, we can get past personalities. We can get past bedside manner. But like what she cared about was like the best surgeon possible, like operating on me. Mm-hmm. So I totally understood that. And so then went in for my chemo appointment with my hematologist, and he's amazing. Like he's awesome. He was super empathetic. Like he made that appointment what I was expecting my other appointment to be. So he's super awesome. Yeah. And so, you know, like after I had done my research, I was like, there's one chemo that they use to treat ovarian cancer that you don't lose your hair. And there's another chemo that you lose like all hair. And so, you know, I was asking like, what chemo are we going with? And he was like, we're going to do the double regimen where you're going to lose like all of your hair, like eyebrows, everything. And I was like,
damn,
you know, I'm 22. Like I get like this for some people that maybe they don't understand, but like I'd already had just like had to take medical leave from my job. Like I was about to lose like 6 months to a year of my life at 22. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just like, I'm putting my foot down. Like, I'm going to find a way. Like, I don't have to lose my hair. And I sent that to the doctor and he was like, you know, like there is like, he just didn't even like present me with any information. Like he's like, there's just really no way. Like, this is what we have to do to save your life. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do research myself and come to that conclusion myself. So I went home, started just Googling. I was like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah,
just
like
try to find something.
Options out there, like who's done what. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Because I don't care. Like if I have to take vitamins, like I'll do whatever. Mm-hmm. So I literally come across like penguin cold caps. Mm-hmm. I was like, no one has brought this to my attention. I've seen multiple cancer doctors at this point, and no one has even mentioned this to me. And I was just like kind of appalled at that point. I was like, at least give me the option of, you know, like if it's my own money, like.
Yeah.
That we would spend to like make this effort. Like, why can't I just at least try? Mm-hmm. So I called and like I had the representative was so nice. Like he kind of gave me his own personal story of like how it had impacted his wife. And I was like, you know what? If I'm gonna do chemo, like I'm gonna at least try to save my hair. Like this is like very, very important to me. Mm-hmm. So went ahead, scheduled that, had my first chemo August 3rd, and we had a professional capper come with us because my mom was like, I can't, I already have enough on my plate. I can't also try to save your hair during this, you know? And so she was amazing. And it was really nice because, you know, going through chemo during COVID, no visitors, like you can't have anyone in the room with you. It's literally you and the nurse. But luckily because she was a medical professional, she could come in with me and she was like going to be changing my caps. So that was really, really nice because I kind of had a buddy, like everyone else there, like had to just sit there by themselves, which I really can't imagine. Like no one wants to sit in your chemo chair by yourself. Mm-hmm. Like that's so isolating and just, and also
isolating
you sit there
general.
For, and you sit there for hours. It's not like, I don't think some people understand like chemo, like you're usually there for like 2 to 4 hours at like the least. So it was really awesome. She's amazing. She was super, super kind and just like, didn't make me feel like I was at chemo. Like she was just always like making conversation, get my mind off it. And it was just amazing. So after, you know, I told my surgeon, that I was going to do cold capping. Mm-hmm. And he was like, there's no chance that you will save your hair. Like, no chance. He's like, don't even waste your time. Yeah. Which is the surgeon that had like said, yeah, I was like, which is, you know, he was the one that had said all these like kind of, you know, that was kind of the strike three for me. No. And so I was like, all right, thank you, but I'm gonna at least try. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, went through round one, and, you know, by day 14, usually you lose everything. Mm-hmm. And I had chemo every 21 days, I think, every 3 weeks. And so came back in for my second appointment, had a full head of hair, like hadn't even like thinned out or anything. So I'm sitting there and he walks in and I'm just like,
hey. You're like,
you know, fixing my hair. Like, this is like my hair, like all of it that's sitting right here.
Don't work, huh?
Mm-hmm. And so he was just like, I think that was the time where I was like, all right, I'm just like checkmate, you know, basically whatever, like you're rude. So went through another round. And that was kind of where like chemo started to hit me like hard. Like the first round, like I was definitely like really, really tired, but I hadn't had like any severe side effects. Round two, like after the first 3 days, I was just like donezo. Like, I feel like I just don't even remember that time in my life. Like, I was just like kind of existing at that point. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, my grandma, like I had mentioned, like she's a breast cancer survivor and she lives like literally two streets down from me. Like, and so she was like there for me through everything, because she was like the only person in our family that like really understood what I was going through.
Yeah.
And she was like, you know, like she had said from the beginning, like, you know, this is like from the beginning of that round, she's like, you're like down for the count after this chemo. Like, that's kind of weird. Like, especially for how young and healthy you are, like, you know, I don't know, like, this is kind of, she was just getting like negative energy, kind of like, I don't know, just like, wasn't getting good impression. I don't know. She's very spiritual and very connected, you know, like she's religious. And so she's just very like, I don't know, she's always had a good idea of like what's going to come next. That's how I'll put it. But
okay.
So I was like, okay, you know, that's just how chemo is, grandma. Like, you know, I'm not going to be very energetic. Yeah. So then the third round, that like literally that night that I had my infusion, I was just down for the count. Like, none of the meds were working. Like, I was so, so sick. And I said to my doctor, like, I'm not feeling a difference in my abdomen. Like, I don't feel like anything's changing. Like, you know, now that I knew like what they were feeling and what to look for, I was like, nothing's changing. Like, I don't feel like this is shrinking. At this point, they're going to do 3 rounds of chemo and then do the surgery. Mm-hmm. And so I should have been like what they considered operable at this point. And I was like, I'm not feeling a difference. Like, I feel terrible, like whatever. And so I like told my grandma and she's like, something's wrong. Like, and at this point too, like they said that if I had like dropped below 110, like I can get another chemo infusion. So I just looked terrible. Like, it was not good. Mm-hmm. And so my grandma was like, you need to say like, you need a CT scan. Like, you cannot do another round of chemo. Like, you won't survive it. Like, and I was like, I don't think I would. Cause I was like literally I couldn't even get up. Like, I couldn't get up to go to the bathroom. Like, my mom had to help me. And so, so I went in for a CT scan. Like, I had to like basically demand a CT scan. I was like, I can't do another round without knowing this is at least working. So they're like, okay, you know, we'll do a CT scan. Go in for the CT scan. I get a call and they're like, you know, your cancer is growing. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, because when we got the biopsy results,
anything to it, nothing.
Yeah. Because when we got the biopsy results, like, I read them, like, the full report, just because, like, I had done my research, like, I kind of, and so, like, in the biopsy report, they said, like, you know, it's high grade, but we did consider low grade, which is typically chemo resistant. Like, I had known that at that point. Mm-hmm. So we had considered low grade, but we went ahead and, like, after, like, further research, like, we went with high grade, because that's just, like, how it's acting and what it looks like. But if I had known, you know, like that low grade was really, really considered, I would have kind of like been more questioning about chemo. And so at that point I was like, okay, so like this is low grade because it's not responding to chemo. And low grade also is more common in like younger women. which is why I was like, why wasn't this a discussion, you know, like with my surgeon, with my hematologist, of like, you know, like we could do further tests to like make sure this is like low grade.
Start throwing stuff at it and see what happens.
Literally. You know? Yeah. Like, especially chemo. Like, it's not just like, it's like not just a pill where you're like, oh, just take it, see like what happens. It's
not
like
just a multivitamin.
And I had, like I had communicated, like I was not good. Like, I wasn't having like the typical chemo experience. Like, I was like very much unwell.
Yeah.
And so that was the last straw for me. I was like, all right, we're switching doctors. We're starting fresh, you know, like we're done with these doctors.
Yeah.
Just at that point, I was like, you couldn't even get the correct like grade of my cancer right. Like, you know, you didn't even like take the time to like make sure, you know.
Yeah.
So we just like, I started researching. I was like, I'm going to find like a doctor that I feel comfortable with that can relate to me and, you know, just figure it out. So
somebody who's a little bit more open-minded, like willing.
Mm-hmm. Literally, like, yeah, I wanted someone that's
with the patient or listen to.
Yeah. Like, I wanted to have like an innovative doctor that was like, you know, up with the times, like was able to do like, I don't know. I was just looking for something different at that point. And I was like, this is our, you know, like he told me I was inoperable, but I'm just going to keep trying to look for a doctor. So there's like multiple things on my side is because I was so young and it's so rare, like doctors were willing to see me because like, I don't know, doctors just want rare cases, like, you know. So luckily I was able to get into UC San Diego and there is a doctor there who specializes in HIPEC, which is like, they like, it's basically a procedure where during the surgery, they like wash your abdomen with chemo.
Yeah.
And so
I had another guest on, Mandy. She talked about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that was the thing that like really drew me to it because even though like low grade often is resistant to chemo, sometimes sometimes you will still go through chemo treatments and like maybe it will respond a little bit. So that was really important to me because I was like, if we're going to do a big surgery, like we're going to go, you know, through the full thing.
Yeah.
And so met with this doctor and he just had a completely different attitude. It was like can do attitude. He was like, you know, like at this, like at that point, my cancer had grown and he considered me operable. Like he was like, no question. Like this is all coming out. Like no worries, like not no worries, but you know, but like his attitude was very much. Yeah. He was like, we got this.
Yeah.
Basically, he made me feel like he could do the surgery in his sleep. He was like, this is just, you know, just like, and I just was like, you know, thank God. Like literally thank God, because the other like surgeon had just made me feel like it was a lost cause. He was like, you know, not responding to chemo, you're inoperable. Like, you know, what are we going to do? And like exactly. So it was just such a, like literally from that point on, my journey had just changed so much. Like I just felt more confident and just, you know, just literally completely transformed my, you know, journey up to that point. And also, I don't think I had mentioned this before, but at the very beginning of my diagnosis, I had just decided to keep it private. Like I only shared with my close friends, close family, because I think kind of taking on that work of like answering texts every day and answering these questions and like updating people on like every single doctor's appointment you go to and like most of the times you don't even have the answers yourself. It's kind of just exhausting.
It's a lot.
So I just like had decided at that point, you know, like I'm really not going to tell. Like, I think there was maybe like 15 people in the world that knew what was going on. So at that point I was like, okay, you know, I just got to keep moving forward with this doctor and like go through the surgery and see what happens. So went in for exploratory surgery because he wanted to get a better look.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, I just want to make sure like we plan this out fully. So we go through the exploratory surgery and I wake up and he's like, all right, so see you next week, like for your debulking surgery. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, and like debulking surgery, like I'd read a lot about it. Like debulking surgery is a very, like, it's a usually typically 8 to 10 hour surgery.
Oh,
like
wow.
It's like a 2 week recovery. Like this is no, like, you know, this isn't a small surgery by any means. Like this
invasive.
Is like, yeah, like life-changing surgery. So I was like, and the fact that he was just like, all right, see you next week. Like, I'm like coming out of like anesthesia. And so I was just like, this is crazy. Like, I mean, I really like, I liked his attitude, but I was just like, I'm not mentally prepared for the surgery yet. Like, so, you know, spent that whole next week kind of, you know, getting ready for the surgery, whatever. And so the few friends I had told, like all of my close home friends, you know, I was thinking, I was like, this has been really hard on them and it's really hard on me. And so because like I had never planned to have a kid like myself, we kind of had like a, not a fun spin on it, but we were like, let's have a party, like let's have a surgery party. So they literally, yeah, it was honestly the best thing. It was such a healing experience for everyone because like throughout my whole journey, like I had kind of taken on like the dark humor of it. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, it was very much like a way of like coping, you know, through dark humor. Mm-hmm. So like at this party, they made a uterus pinata. Like I hit the uterus pinata. Like we, like every, we, it was just really funny. That's, like it was like a full pink party and it was just like so much fun. We had such a great night and it was literally the night before my surgery. Like I was leaving at 6 a.m. to like go into my surgery. And it was just like a really, and I would just highly recommend it to like,
it's a nice send
a lot
off.
Of people, if that's your personality, like really go for it, because it was also good for my friends. Like they were, obviously they were nervous. Like this was one of those surgeries that, you know, it, there was deal. Like a chance. Yeah. That I might not even make it through the surgery. So I think it was really good for my friends to kind of like, you know, not a positive, cause I hate that word. I hate to like associate that word, but you know, it was like a good experience, a good send off. And it kind of like left everyone with like, you know, like she's going to be okay. Cause she was laughing, like it'll be good. And so, you know, went in for the surgery the next morning and they were like, okay, eight to 10 hours. Like that's what we're working with. Like that's what's going to happen. And so also my mom couldn't come back with me. Like I had gone through this whole journey literally by myself, which is really difficult. And I think like, I really feel for everyone that's had to go through this during COVID.
Yeah. Mad respect for all of the cancer survivors, cancer like, patients through COVID. Like so I can't difficult. Even imagine, like so difficult. Yeah.
No. Yeah. And it's like, I mean, luckily for me, like I have that personality where I can compartmentalize and I was able to take notes during these appointments.
Yeah.
And, but I just feel for like, you know, some people that don't have that personality and like, it's hard to take on all this information. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like maybe not pay attention, but you know, like not really understand what's going to happen next and all this stuff. So I just really want to like, you know, that's really difficult. So go in for the surgery, you know, get the epidural, like they're talking me through it. Like they're like, it's all going to be good. Like no worries. And at this point, I think I cried one time throughout this and during the whole process, just because I'm just not really emotional like that. Like, I just am not really a crier. That just really is kind of me. So, yeah. So, but so we were rolling into the OR for the surgery. I had like, my mom was able to come in for 5 minutes to the like, you know, area where you like get rolled in and really just say like, good luck, like love you kind of stuff. And so that was really hard. And then like kind of watching her walk away, that was when I started to like feel the lump in my throat. And I was like, oh no, this is the worst possible time for this to happen. And so then, you know, roll into the OR. And then when I heard the medical tools being like counted, you know, that sound of just like the clink, 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 that's kind of that. And then seeing my mom walk away, I was like, okay, this isn't good. Like I can feel, you know, the lump forming. And I just remember this one male nurse who was like the one who checked me in, kind of did the whole, like start my IV, everything. They were like putting me onto the OR table, like, you know, situating me on there. And I just kind of looked at him and like, I think he could tell in my eyes, he could see the tears forming and he just grabbed my hand. He was like, literally didn't let go. And he was like, you're okay. Like, you're going to be fine. I'm going to see you right when you wake up. You're totally fine. And like, literally just talked to me like that until I was like under anesthesia.
Yeah.
Like it was just, you know, that moment was like I could feel the tears like streaming down my face as I was like going under anesthesia and just him being there. And that moment was like, so nice. Like it just, you know, that was like priceless. That was a priceless moment for me. Like that was just like, to feel secure going into that type of surgery was like just so important, I think. So yeah, so they had started the surgery. Like, I know this all because of my mom. So at UC San Diego, obviously, they like do text updates through surgery.
Oh, that's really
so
cool.
It's kind of nice. So she like got the, like, okay, so Peyton's under anesthesia. Like, it's kind of those kind of text messages. And I don't know if it's automated or if it's an actual nurse. I'm pretty sure it's like an actual nurse that kind of like adjusts what it says. So they're like, okay, Peyton's under anesthesia. And then she gets a test like 45 minutes later. Okay, like the doctors have like are gonna start. And she's like, oh, that's kind of weird. That's a long time gap there. Like, that's weird. And so then she was getting all these text notifications, like, you know, they just administered another bag of blood. They just administered another bag of blood. She got 7 text messages like those.
Holy
hell. Yeah. And so it's just like, as much as like, yeah, of course she wants those updates, being a mom, she was sitting outside like the hospital. Like, she wasn't going to leave. She was going to sit there all day, no matter what it took, because, you know, she's a mom. And so she's sitting there getting these text messages and she's like, what do you mean another bag of blood? Like, what does that even mean? And so during the surgery, I guess when they opened me up, they were like, whoa, like, this is a lot. Like, this is not, you know, sometimes scans don't even show the full picture. Mm-hmm. And even the exploratory surgery, it was just
with scopes, right?
You know, teeny cameras. Yeah. Yeah. And so they couldn't see the full picture until they made the midline incision. Mm-hmm. And they, I guess they both looked at each other and they're like, is this possible kind of situation? Oh, like, is this possible? And they, what they told my mom when they called her after, they said that they looked at each other and they said, if this was my sister or my mom, we would do it. Mm-hmm. So they were like, we're going, we're just gonna go ahead and see what we can kind of do here. So the surgery ended up being 14 hours.
Wow.
My mom sat outside for 14 hours, getting these text messages, you know, getting updated. And she said when she got that call finally, she was just like, so relieved, like, at least it's over, at least they figured it out. And they were ecstatic. They were like, we got everything possible. Like, there was like no trace left, like what we can see. Obviously, there's always a chance there's microscopic cells, but like, these surgeons did everything they possibly could. Like, they left nothing unturned. Like, it was all out. And yeah, so it was a full hysterectomy. My spleen, they stripped my bladder, omentum, part of my stomach, part of my bowel. Like, it was a full, like, and so after that, like, we had already, you know, been prepared for like at least 10 to 14 days recovery. Mm-hmm. But after that type of surgery, they're like, you know, it might be a little longer. You don't really know. Like, this was extensive. And because I was so weak from chemo, like, it was, they're like, this might be a really rough one, like, recovery. And I had lost 7 bags of blood during the surgery. Like,
yeah.
So waking up, I barely remember waking up. I just remember waking up. Apparently I said something, because I don't know if I said this, I don't think I did. I got a chemo cat during all this. So I guess the first thing I said to the nurse was like something about my cat, Bowie. I was like, my cat, Bowie, like nothing about my mom, not about my family. I was like, my cat, Bowie, like, I love him. And so I guess my mom heard that story. Yeah. And I guess my mom heard that story. She's like, oh, great. Like, thanks for that. You know,
just chopped liver over here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I just sat outside for 14 hours, like, you know, stressing, but it's fine. Oh, so yeah. So I woke up, I was in ICU. I was supposed to be in ICU for like 6 days. Like, they were just ready for me to just, you know, have a tough time. Mm-hmm. And I woke up and I was like, you know, looked at my mom. I was like, hey, like, just, hey, what's up? And she's like, what? Like, you're like coherent and whatever. And like, obviously I was on a lot of pain meds.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know, just kind of like, she said she could see just my personality coming back. Mm-hmm. And so I was literally in ICU for 24 hours and they're like, well, she's looking good. Like, we're just going to move her up to the normal oncology floor because she really doesn't need to be in ICU.
Wow.
And so, because for some weird reason, you're allowed to have visitors in ICU, but you're not allowed to have visitors on the normal floor. Not really sure the logic behind that.
That is odd.
I'm not really sure. So of course my mom was like a little bit bummed because ICU was the one time she could be with me. And then once I got moved up to the normal floor, that was when she was just like not allowed to come up. Mm-hmm. So once I was on the normal floor, then I was not allowed to have any visitors. Like, No one I knew could come in the room. So that was a super bummer. Like that made it just like that much harder. But I think it also pushed me to like, just want to get out of there so much faster. Like I was just ready. I was like, the second I got up to the normal floor, I was like, all right, I'm ready to get out. Like, what do I need to do? Like, that's what I kept saying. I was like, what do I need to do today
to get discharged,
like, to get, you know, out of here? And they were like, well, first we have to like get you just sitting up. Like, that's like the first step, you know, hurdle we have to go through. So yeah, that hospital stay was, I mean, I don't remember the first few days definitely because a lot, like it was a lot of sleeping, a lot of like pain meds. And then I think by like the second day that I was in upstairs, so it was like 3 days total. I was like, all right, I'm ready to do some laps. I'm ready to like walk around, like, let's get out of here. And they're just like, you're kind of crazy a little bit, but okay. Like you're a little bit, we're concerned, but no, just kidding.
Good, kind of crazy, right?
Exactly. So yeah, I was just like doing laps, like doing everything I possibly could. Like at that point too, like, because they had taken part of my stomach and my bowel. You know, like I had to just like eat a normal meal, like do those kind of things that you don't even think about, to get discharged. And so I just remember I put on like Food Network to like try to get myself to be hungry, like all of these different things, like weird little quirks that I did to like kind of just put myself in a different mental space and just get out of there. So it ended up on like the sixth day that I was there, every single day my surgeon came in and checked on me and they're like, how are you feeling? You know, like they did the medical rounds because UC San Diego is like a research university. So they came in with like 12 people every time. It was like all the interns, and I'm just sitting there like, I'm just like, you're coming in at a terrible time right now. Like it's 5 a.m. But so I just remember that. And it was on the sixth day and I just looked at my surgeon and I was like, I'm getting out of here today. Like I'm getting out. And he was like, you were supposed, like the minimum day you're supposed to be here is 10 days. Like, let's just understand that. And I was like, no, no, I'm ready. Like, what do I need to do? And he's like, well, you need to walk like 10 laps. You need to eat like full meal and like, you know, do everything as a normal person should. And you'll be, I guess I'll discharge you. Like, I don't know. He was like, there's no chance she's going to do this, you know, whatever. I'm just going to say it. And sure enough, I got up, walked 10 laps, ordered like full meal and was like, I'm getting out of here. Like I need out. So I ended up getting discharged like on the sixth day. And they were just like, they were like, we've never, this is like pretty crazy. Like, especially the surgery that you went through, it was just insane. But yeah, I mean, I was so weak. Like I was putting on a strong face, but at that point I was down to when they weighed me, I was 93 pounds. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah. It was like,
you're just a frame.
I was literally a frame of a person, like,
wow,
not good. So yeah, I ended up getting discharged. And then, you know, the next few weeks was, I was literally just too weak to, when I had to go into my follow-up appointments, like I had to be wheeled in on a wheelchair. Like I was just like, so like just not strong enough to like walk, anything like that. And so then because of like the part they took for my bowel, I had to have another surgery in 2 months. To like re-put that back together, you know, kind of, and also they're going to go in and just like, maybe look around a little bit, make sure like everything looks good, do a double check. So that was like, I just recovered from that surgery and then I had to mentally prepare for like the secondary surgery. And so, you know, I was like, okay, I got through that. I'm not super worried about this next surgery. It's going to be a breeze compared to what I just went through. So then that surgery comes up and I was honestly excited because I was like, okay, get this done. And then I'm really done. Like, I really feel like it's kind of completed. So going for that surgery, just really wasn't worried. I was like, this is going to be a breeze, whatever, you know, like I had said, wake up and I'm just like, okay. And they're like, everything looks good. You know, it was a successful surgery. We're like really happy with this outcome. You know, we did a double take and everything looks clean. So like, okay, awesome. Good. And then that surgery day was when stuff just didn't go right for some reason. I think it was partially because, I mean, honestly, I had PTSD from being in that hospital and like just everything leading up to it, just so stressful. And I think my body was just like, you put me through so much and this is the last straw kind of thing. I'm like, it was just like, yeah, I've been strong through this whole thing and I just can't take another thing. And so, yeah, during that hospital stay, it was just, it was hard. Like I was like, there was like 2 days where I was just vomiting everything. Like I was on a full liquid diet, like, you know, and that was hard enough because I'm also recovering from like my midline incision, like my scar is from the top, like right here to, so that's not really fun. That's not a fun experience.
Painful to vomit.
Super painful. So that happened. So then there was like 3 days where I was just on a full liquid diet, which obviously makes you super weak, like couldn't really do much there. And then I was also getting, you know, pain meds, everything else. And they gave me this anti-nausea medication. And then I started having seizures.
Oh no.
So it was just a whole thing. And my mom was able to come in because they just felt, obviously they felt terrible for me at this point. They're like, we're going to make an exception. She has a lot of anxiety. So she was able to come in. But of course, the day she comes in is the day I start having seizures.
Oh no.
So of course that totally freaks her out. And she just like, you know, she's already been through a lot. And so they couldn't even really figure out why. I guess it's Compuzine. And so it's kind of good for some, you know, people to know that you could have that kind of reaction. Mm-hmm. I actually know another ovarian cancer survivor that I connected with. She had the same exact thing happen to her. So it's kind of important to maybe know that if you are having bowel surgery, that can happen at times is, I guess, when you have an inactive, like intestinal tract, sometimes it just doesn't, I don't know the medical term behind it, but, you know, it just doesn't, you know, process the right way. So I think that's important for people to know. But
interesting.
After that, also, this is like the week of Christmas. Like I'm in the hospital the day before Christmas Eve. And so I was able to get discharged. So like I was supposed to be out of there like 4 days before Christmas Eve, but because of just everything that I went wrong, I got discharged the day before Christmas Eve, I think, or that afternoon.
Okay.
So finally I was just like, you know, done. I was able to come home. I felt terrible, but like, I was like, at least I'm done before Christmas, you know, I'm done. And so that was kind of where like all the tough stuff was over. And then after that surgery, I kind of felt like, and just like it at that point had been like 6 months of treatment. And I felt like it was kind of time for me to, you know, like share publicly kind of like what I've been through and kind of like let people know. And so, yeah, I think it was like the day before New Year's Eve, I was like, let's leave all this in 2020, like 2020 like sucks. So let's just leave it all. Exactly. So I kind of just made the decision and for some people, you know, I don't know, being from like this generation, I was like, I'm just going to post it on Instagram and just leave it like that because I don't have the time to text 100 people this long text message. And so like, I wrote that in my post. I'm like, I'm really sorry if this is the way you're finding this out. Like, but for my mental health, like this was the best thing that for me to just keep this private for a time. But now I'm like really happy to share. And from that point on, I went from just not telling anyone and like barely talking about it to like it being something that I talk about all the time. Like
I'm doing this.
So I think that's like, so I think I just want to validate like some people's experience, like, you know, like you don't have to tell people until you're ready because like, I don't think some people understand like that work that you're about to put on yourself of like I was saying, like updating, texting, responding to text messages, like take that time for yourself. Like you already have so much on your plate. You know, you don't need to put that extra work on yourself if you don't feel like it, or if you want to, then that's totally, I mean, everyone's experience is valid. That's something I've really learned is like, there's no right way or there's no one way to do it. Like, and people responded fine. Like no one, I was like, oh, are people going to believe me? You know, cause I have my hair. Are people, you know, like, going to be upset that I didn't tell them? And like, I didn't get any bad responses, you know, like so I think there's always like that fear, but I mean, really taking that time for yourself, I think is really important.
I think so too. And I think that's really great advice for people out there too, with like maybe a recent diagnosis. Like you don't have to tell the world right away. Just focus on getting better yourself. And then people will be okay when they find out after the fact. They'll be fine.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think your approach was really good. Just being like, sorry, you're finding out this way if you didn't know before, but
yeah,
it was good for your mental health. And people understand that for sure.
Exactly. So yeah.
Wow. So, okay. Like what's happened since then? Since like, I guess, since Christmas Eve or New Year's
Eve? Yeah, Christmas Eve. I was just like, it was kind of like, obviously it was terrible to be during the holidays, like kind of like trying to like get, like I was still recovering at that point, but honestly it was in a weird way really nice, like to kind of leave that in 2020, like all the terrible things. Like, I was just like, it felt like a new year. Like I kind of released the, I felt like I was keeping the secret, and like to have just the new year, start fresh and kind of just have a new take on it and like take it somewhere different was really, really nice. So since then, everything was looking good. Everything's good. I had my first like true routine scan, in I think March. Yeah, March. And that was clean. So I'm considered like NED, which I prefer that term over like cancer free, just because of
no evidence of disease.
No evidence of disease. Yeah. Because of the nature of ovarian cancer, it does like have a very high recurrence rate. And I also just think like for me, just saying cancer free, like I just will never really consider myself that.
Yeah.
And I know for some people, like saying that is super empowering. And it's like, I left that in the past. Like I leave that behind, like, you know, and for me, I just am like, it was such a transformative experience. And like, there's certain things that I, you know, my life now is just completely different because of cancer. In some ways I'm thankful because I think it really taught me a lot. But so yeah, now I'm considered in like remission or, you know, no evidence of disease. So I'm super, super happy about that. And like my surgeons and doctors are really happy with my progress. So
yeah,
it's been good. And yeah, I started a blog and it's so crazy because I literally went from just really not telling anyone to now it's like something I think about all the time, like different ways I can advocate or different ways I can tell my story. And it's been really awesome. Like I didn't know what I was expecting the response to be, but it's really nice because I've gotten like every day I get messages from like young women, like, you know, what were your symptoms? Like what made you go in or kind of different things like that. And it's really nice because it's not even just ovarian cancer. Like I want young people in general, not even just young women, like to go in and, you know, be aware that as terrible as it is, like we're not too young, we're not too healthy. Like it can happen to anyone. And exactly. Like, and it's just really important to like be proactive and like, you know, have those, you know, screenings early as you can, especially if you have like a family history of cancer.
Absolutely. And just listening to your body too, you know, like totally. Things not right, you know, don't ignore it. Like it's go in, like you went in with the belly button symptoms and like, that's good. You went in, like, forget what that doctor said. Why'd you wait so long? Whatever.
Yeah.
It's whatever. It's like weird stuff happening in your life, especially when you're a young adult. But the fact is you still listened to your body and you went in and you demanded certain things, you advocated for yourself, like whether it was switching doctors because it wasn't a good fit, and that's okay. People need to realize that is okay. Yep. And, you know, like requesting that, the scan. So like it's just all these things to advocate for yourself. When something's not right, you need to stand up and
totally
and make it right for you.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's my biggest thing is I think especially for like some young women, especially, but just women in general, they feel like, I mean, I had that happen to me. I was dismissed at multiple doctors. Like, you know, they're like, oh, it's just hormones. Oh, it's your birth control. Like, you know, and you constantly just get dismissed and then you feel like, well, I don't want to go in because like, it's just cramps or it's just blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, like, you know, advocate for yourself. Like if you notice a change, like there's a reason for it usually, and it could be nothing or it could be something. And like, you owe it to yourself to figure out what that is and like be heard, you know?
Absolutely. 1000%. That's perfectly put. With that being said, like what you sprinkled some advice throughout, but like, do you have any advice for the listeners out there, whether or not they're cancer survivors, cancer patients, or even, you know, family members, or just the random person listening to this podcast, like what advice do you have for them?
Oh gosh, I have so much on my mind. I think for me, I think especially if there's like an ovarian survivor or patient out there, I think if you are struggling with like, you know, either you know, having kids was something you'd always wanted, or it wasn't for me, like, or you're kind of along those lines. I think honestly, in a weird way, like adopting that cat was such a good way for me to like feel needed and feel like a person, you know, like I felt so dependent on everyone else. Like I needed help with everything. And like having, you know, a companion like that was really like healing. Yeah. Also, I think it helps my mom in a weird way. I think it helped my mom because like she, you know, I'd always said, I'm not having kids, mom, like just get over it, whatever. And I think for her, like it kind of helped her because it was kind of like, I don't know, it helped her get through it too. Because like she, I mean, for your family members, it's also hard because especially like a mom or your parents, like it's hard because it's like, you know, maybe for her, like, yeah. And so I think it was nice for her. So I think honestly, getting companion to get you through this is super good. Like, animals are a really therapeutic way to get through something like this. And like, it is a responsibility, but in a good way, because it made me feel needed and yeah. like I was contributing something. So that's like one thing I actually really think is good. And also I think, you know, just reminding yourself, like I had said, like your journey or whatever you want to call it is completely valid. Like however you handle it mm-hmm. is totally valid. However you want to talk about it. If you want to like, you know, make funny TikToks about it, or, you know, just not tell a single soul except for one person, like that's completely valid. And no one should tell you like that's wrong or that's mm-hmm. not right. Like your experience is valid, and people are gonna be okay with it either way. Like I think mm-hmm. that's like a big anxiety thing, but people are gonna be okay with it.
Yeah.
And I think when the time is right, really talking about it really, really helps. Like mm-hmm. writing my blog is super therapeutic. Sometimes I don't even like realize I like thought that way or felt that way or experienced that until I'm like writing.
Yeah.
And it's a really good way. Like, even if you don't want to publish it, just like journaling is a super good way. Just talking about it is a good way to like process your feelings about it and kind mm-hmm. of like get it out. I would say that's like a big piece of advice too, because you don't have to go public with it, but you know, just journaling for yourself is a really good way to process your feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like for you, even though it was kind of over the span of a year, it kind of happened fairly quickly from
totally
scan or ultrasound to diagnosis to mm-hmm. surgery and chemo and everything like that. So being able to process it it's important, because like you said something about PTSD too, because that's mm-hmm. that's real, like especially like with your experience with how invasive surgery was and how aggressive your cancer was. So mm-hmm. it's really important to process it, whether you talk to somebody or journal or, you know,
yeah,
however 100%. You process it is like, it just needs to happen. And I think that's really good advice for you to suggest journaling or blogging or something. Yeah. That totally. Being said, how can we find your blog? Is it public?
Yeah. It's public. Okay. So I like changed, I was on Medium for a while and then I changed platforms to Substack.
Okay.
So that people like you get an email notification when I post, because I guess like on Medium they weren't getting notifications. So, so that's where my blog is. And, my first blog, was kind of about like how I got diagnosed and like what made me go in. Mm-hmm. And that's been like a super popular one. I've gotten a lot of like different questions, and like, to be honest, if anyone's listening, like you can feel free to message me whenever. Like I'm like so open to talking about it, even if it isn't necessarily like ovarian cancer, like, mm-hmm. you know, I still can give advice on like, mm-hmm. you know, just even advocating for yourself. Like
yeah.
a family friend had like texted me and she was like, you know, like, hey, like something was going on with their medical life. Like, can you give me advice on like how to advocate for myself, like at the doctor? Mm-hmm. And I think if there's one thing like that I am now good at, it's like, you know, standing up to doctors and like advocating for myself. So I think if anything, like I've just like been able to give a lot of advice on like how to like speak with a medical professional in a manner where you like sound educated and you're not just like the Google fear, you know,
yeah.
like it's like you can have evidence and like feel heard and like feel like you're also like, you know, educated on the topic.
Yeah.
Without being like, well, I Googled it and like WebMD said, like, it's like, they'll respect you if you actually like, you know, have some sort of like background mm-hmm. knowledge. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I think that's like, that's really the biggest part of my blog, is really spreading the word on like proactive healthcare and chemo capping, like chemo cold capping.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big, really, really big deal for me. Like that I was able to recover mentally much quicker, because I do have my hair and I had it throughout treatment. Like mm-hmm. from the shoulders up, I looked like myself mm-hmm. to myself, which was a big thing. Like I had that light at the end of the tunnel, you know, that was like, I'm that much closer to like kind of putting this behind me or like getting through treatment, because like I was able to like see a part of myself mm-hmm. Throughout treatment. And it's just like, to some people, you know, it might not seem like that big of a deal, but to me it was. And like, that's totally valid, kind of like what I was saying.
Yeah.
And so just like, obviously it's, I wish it was more accessible, because it is expensive, but mm-hmm. there are so many companies out there and like that will like give you a grant or like help fund some of the like costs for it. So I think just like if people have questions about that, like I have been working with like Penguin Fold Caps to like kind of do some social media stuff and just like getting the word out there.
Yeah.
So I think just awareness and like trying to like increase accessibility to that is like so important, because so many women don't even know that's an option. And I just think that's so sad, because I mean, for so many women, like that's such a big part. It's like losing your hair is like almost the most, one of the most devastating factors of like a diagnosis.
It's part of your identity. Mm-hmm. Whether it's long, short, red,
whatever it is. Like that's you. And like, so I think that's like, those are the two big things in my blog. It's just like getting the word out there and, you know, cold capping.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, Peyton, like I really enjoyed it, enjoyed our chat, and, thank you for sharing your story and being so open about it. I will make sure to include her links for social media as well as her blog in the episode notes, so you can check her out and ask questions if you have any questions for her. Like you said, it doesn't have to be about ovarian cancer. The cancer community is the cancer community. Like, we're all here to support each other. And I know Peyton will help support you guys out there as well. But thank you so much for being on. And is there anything else you'd like to add before we sign off?
Honestly, I don't think so. I can't think of anything else. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, side note, I do love your shirt.
Oh, thank you.
People can't see it, but it says ovarian cancer tried to kill me. It's a great shirt. Yeah. It's a great shirt to wear.
I made these shirts for like, I just did it on Bonfire, like an awareness campaign.
Okay.
So I made this for myself. And then for anyone else who ordered, it just says ovarian cancer tried to kill my friend.
Okay.
And then on the back, it says, know your family history, know the symptoms and get checked. So it's kind of like, I haven't worn it out in public yet. This actually came yesterday, and I was like, I'm just going to wear it on the podcast.
I was noticing it throughout our conversation. So I'll make sure to get that link from you as well for the Bonfire page. If people want to purchase it, they can check it out. Just check out the campaign that you have.
Yeah. It's a good conversation starter. Cause I think it'll just start the conversation.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Thank you again, Peyton, for joining me on my Cancer Story podcast and for sharing your story. It was, it's an incredible story. Like, you are extremely strong and an intelligent woman to be able to get through this with you and your family, and just to come out the other side, telling this, having this story to tell. So I am so appreciative of you sharing this.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.